This is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of March. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier. Here's what we got for you this week. Texas pays for rape evidence kits, but sexual assault victims have to cover other expenses.
Survivors are really shocked and surprised when they get these bills.
Could Austin's notorious traffic gridlock be helped or harmed by the self-driving car?
We actually saw travel times increase. You know, we actually saw congestion actually get a little bit worse.
And we'll ask a couple veteran rock critics to review South by Southwest.
We're looking ahead for who are the artists that we're going to pay attention to in the next year or two.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend. But first, let's get up to speed on what our state lawmakers were doing this week in that large, beautiful Capitol building in downtown Austin, because it was a pretty busy week for them. KUT's Ben Philpott fills us in on all the spring break action in the halls of the Texas legislature.
State lawmakers actually put their heads down and went to work, with the first week bills could be debated and voted on in House and Senate chambers. Now, there weren't a lot of bills passed, but both chambers had day-long debates on high-profile legislation. In the House, they passed out a bill increasing penalties on human trafficking. There was also one from Angleton Republican Dennis Bonin that would increase funding for border security.
These transnational gangs and cartels, their focus is not the valley or the border. Their focus is the nation, and we just unfortunately are the front line of their havoc.
The Senate's big bills expanded gun rights on college campuses and allowed concealed carry licensees to openly carry a handgun. Here's Granbury Senator Brian Birdwell explaining why he carried the bill that would allow concealed handgun license holders to bring handguns onto college campuses.
My concern is to expand the freedom of our most trustworthy citizens to access to property that they, as citizens of this state, own. Our CHL holders are the most law-abiding members of our society.
But as I was reflecting back on the week, I noticed something interesting about how I was ending my stories on those Senate bills.
Final passage of the bill is expected today. It will then head to the House, where there may be less enthusiasm for gun rights expansion. It could easily pass out of the Senate, but could have some trouble in the House today before it heads to the House, where lawmakers may not be as motivated to pass the bill.
Yeah, you see the pattern? High-priority bills in the Senate may not be high priorities in the House. Sure, Ben, you say that, but how do you know? Magic 8-ball? Ouija board? Even better, Speaker Joe Strauss said so. Kind of. Did he say, we're going to block Senate bills? Absolutely not. But you can piece together that picture. First, look back at the history of the House, like a vote in 2013 that showed that chamber overwhelmingly rejected school vouchers. That's a Senate priority this session, FYI. There are also recent interviews with Speaker Strauss. Here he is last month talking about the chances of campus carry passing the House when you consider the UT System Chancellor Bill McRaven, a former Navy SEAL, opposes the bill.
Personally, I would caution anyone to ignore Admiral McRaven when you're talking about arms and ammunition.
Now, in that same interview with UT Politics Project Director Jim Henson, Strauss pointed out that the House is very friendly to the Second Amendment. And last session, the House passed a campus carry bill. So again, less enthusiasm doesn't equal not going to pass. But Speaker Strauss has clearly said his goals include transportation, education, and border security. Gun rights don't fall under any of those categories. As we get closer to the halfway point of the session, I'd like to hear from you about what bills you're following and what questions you have about how the legislature works. You can let me know on Twitter. I'm at Ben Philpott, KUT, and I'll start including your suggestions and questions in coming weeks. Ben Philpott, KUT News.
Right now, there's only one place in Travis County where sexual assault victims can go to get evidence collected 24/7 by a certified sexual assault nurse examiner, and that's at St. David's Emergency Room in Austin. While the state will pay for the exam itself, there are a lot of other costs related to sexual assault that the victim has to pay for themselves, and those costs can add up. KUT's Kate McGee reports one group in Austin is trying to change that.
5 years ago, Moira Foley was a nurse in New Orleans. She remembers the night a teenager, a rape victim, came into her hospital.
We had our evidence collection kit, and we had this poor 16-year-old who had been assaulted during Mardi Gras. And we literally had to open up the kit and read the instructions. And as I'm standing there doing it, I'm thinking to myself, this is her evidence. I mean, if this goes to trial, it's us who it's on, and we don't know what we're doing.
That's when she decided to get certified to perform sexual assault forensic exams, or SAFE exams. Now she's one of 9 nurses at St. David's who perform SAFE exams every day, 24/7. SAFE exams are done in a room at the back of the emergency department at St. David's, and Foley says it's a room most people never want to be in.
Small. small, not as warm as we would like it. The temperature is always cold. But no, I mean, it looks like a medical exam room. There's nothing super special about it or fancy. We try and put some curtains on the wall and make it a little bit more homely. But at the end of the day, it is where a medical exam is performed, and that is what it is.
There are 2 high-tech microscopes, dyes, and blood drawing kits for the exams, and extra clothing.
We'll be taking their clothing as evidence, and by no means we want to send them home in a hospital gown.
When someone in Texas is sexually assaulted and needs a rape evidence kit, the state reimburses local police for that forensic exam, especially if the victim immediately files a police report. But sometimes victims need more than just a forensic exam. They need to be treated for
injuries that need medical attention.
Triage, medical clearance, treatment of any medical issues, the medications that a sexual assault survivor needs to prevent STI, sexually transmitted infections, and pregnancy.
That's Bruce Kellison, a researcher at UT Austin, and Connie Stogner with the local advocacy group Safe Place. They research and work with sexual assault and domestic violence victims, respectively. Plus, rape survivors have to pay just to be admitted into the ER in the first place. They also need to figure out how to deal with
lost work productivity, counseling.
How to get crime victims comp, to figure out how to pay for lost wages or counseling services. Then you have to figure out where to go for those counseling services. Then you have to figure out the next steps with your court advocacy and what's going to happen in the criminal justice system.
That's Kellison and his co-worker at UT Austin, Noel Bush Armendariz. Overall, the hospital bills can range from a couple $100s to over $1,000. Moira Foley, the nurse at St. David's, says when it comes to the stress of getting a forensic exam.
For patients, I think billing is probably one of the biggest ones. That's always in the back of everybody's mind.
Foley says the nurses sit down with each patient and try to find ways to reduce costs, but sometimes there's not a lot the nurses can do.
Survivors are really shocked and surprised when they get these bills.
That's Stogner with Safe Place.
And it's just a pretty sad situation that someone who's already having, you know, struggling with trying to deal with this horrible trauma then has to have this other, you know, big hurdle to try to figure out how to get over.
Stogner says many women don't have insurance to pay for these additional costs or don't want to use their current insurance. Foley at St. David's says she sees
the college kid who's not ready to tell her mom and dad about what happened. So she'll opt to not involve her insurance so that mom and dad don't find out. Or maybe they have a high deductible and, you know, they have a health savings account with a really high deductible. They know they're not going to come anywhere near meeting that. So if they just pay for the medications at an outside pharmacy in lieu of here at the hospital, they'll save costs tremendously.
Or the victim might share their insurance with his or her attacker, a spouse or a partner, and doesn't want them knowing they've had the exam. But if a victim wants the exam done by a trained nurse, which is key if a victim wants evidence collected correctly for trial, St. David's is their only nearby option. And Connie Stogner with Safe Place says survivors are forced to pay the overhead costs.
This exam could be done somewhere that's not an emergency room, and so then these costs would not ever be incurred in the first place. I think community partners in Travis County, including St. David's, really recognize the need for an exam site outside of the hospital system where victims who aren't in need of that emergency care could receive the medical exam and medications free of charge.
That's what Safe Place is planning to open, a 24-hour clinic staffed by certified nurses to perform safe exams on women and men who do not have additional medical needs.
Our ERs do an amazing job for treating trauma, but they're busy. You know, you don't want someone in that hospital system if they don't need those services. You know, I think that there's certainly an attention to preventative care in a lot of ways. And I think having folks not end up in an ER when they don't need those services would be helpful for everyone.
Foley at St. David's wouldn't speak directly about Safe Place's plan, but she says there are some benefits to have the exam done at an emergency room.
Genital trauma that may need intervention there, or a patient who didn't disclose to the ER physician that they were, say, choked to the point of passing out. You know, the ER doctor may do a quick exam, and at first the patient seems fine, but when we're sitting in here spending a few hours with them, they're not answering questions appropriately, they seem groggy or whatever, or we'll find strangulation marks on their neck, things like that. We'll realize, wait a minute, this needs to be looked at further by the doctor.
So there are some benefits to having it in the emergency room.
Absolutely. A safety issue is huge.
But Safe Place says 96% of sexual assault survivors do not need additional medical care, citing an article from 1997. Nurses at St. David's disagree. Out of the 96 patients they've seen so far this year, 65 have needed additional medical care. That means everything from alcohol withdrawal and cardiac care to additional medications for injuries. Kate McGee, KUT News.
Churches are among the most segregated places in the country, and that includes Texas. A study by a religious scholar, Curtis Paul DeYoung, found that only 5% of churches in the U.S. are racially integrated. That's why KUT's Joy Diaz was surprised to learn that there's a house of worship in East Austin that's part of the 5%.
It's Sunday morning. It's cold and wet outside. For many, Sundays are the beginning of the week, a time to gather and worship.
The Quaker church I'm about to enter is on MLK Boulevard. Quaker services are silent. From the window, I can see the crowd is getting ready.
Some people sit on the floor. Some people sit on benches. There are blankets. There are pillows. There are Bibles. I'm going in. I'm at the same place I visited Sunday. It's the same address, same buildings. On Sundays, it's a church. On Fridays, it's a mosque.
Oh, how y'all doing today? Welcome to the masjid. Glad to have you here today.
Men, women, and a couple of families with small children come in.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Some elderly folks sit on chairs. The rest are cross-legged on the floor or kneeling on colorful rugs. Muslims and Quakers have been sharing this same space in East Austin for a couple of years now.
We believe that there is that of God in everyone.
J.W. Wostall is a Quaker. She's part of the committee that agreed to share the facilities with the East Austin community of Al Islam, the Muslim congregation. Wostall says since there's that of God in everyone, Muslims and Quakers discovered they have that in common. Then came the possibility of sharing the same space. When they first met, both groups found out there were more values they shared. Two stuck with Wostall.
To me, peace and spirituality are the things that I think of when I think of this group and my interaction with them.
The man who leads the Muslim congregation is Imam Asim Sharif. He says these communities appear to be different, but the differences are only on the surface.
One of the basic teachings in our religion is that to really know someone is really to spend time with them, live with them, work with them, do business with them, and then you really know the person.
Muslims and Quakers decided to take this relationship a bit further. They sometimes have joint meetings and, on special occasions, joint meals. Again, J.W. Wostall.
And it's really been very beneficial to them and to us.
At the end of the Muslim service, it's time for announcements.
And of course, Iman has some baked goodies for us. Thank you for your time. Assalamu alaikum.
Congregants trickle to the back and purchase apple tarts and carrot muffins. The money goes toward a building fund. The community of Al Islam eventually wants to have its own space. For now, though, they share some expenses with the Quakers. They don't have to, since nobody charges them rent. But they do, because as Wostall says, it's beneficial to both communities. Up until now, the Muslim and Quaker relationship in East Austin was unknown to many Austinites, in part because Quakers are a little private, in part because the media is not always kind to Muslims, and they don't want the attention if they don't have to have it. But Imam Asim Sharif is convinced there are more of these interactions going on than people know about.
There is good going on all over the world all the time. And quite often, we don't always see that.
The next time East Austin Quakers and Muslims will part bread together will be during Ramadan at the end of spring. Joy Diaz, KUT News.
South by Southwest Interactive has come to a close, and one big trend this year was connected car technology. And that could be anything from your car knowing that a light is about to turn red to a vehicle completely driving itself. KUT's Terrence Henry takes a look at where self-driving car technology is today and where it might take us in the future.
I'm standing next to a white Audi SUV at the South by Southwest Interactive Festival. It looks pretty normal from the outside. But
we've modified this car to be a self-driving car. Basically, we've integrated many different sensors, software that allows the car to drive itself.
Ryan Middleton is with one of the largest car parts companies in the world, Delphi. They make things like stereos and navigation systems. But a little over a year ago, Delphi opened up a lab in Silicon Valley, where they developed working prototypes of self-driving cars. Let's hop in one. Cool. This car doesn't look much different from the original model, but there are a few modifications. One, a fingerprint scanner.
In the future, you don't want, say, little Johnny requesting the car to take him to grandma's house without mom and dad knowing, right?
So, security issue solved. But then you get to a bigger problem with self-driving cars, humans. Delphi thinks that before cars become self-driving everywhere, they'll be used for highways first. The robot will drive while the car's on the highway, but the human will need to take over when it's time to exit. There are cameras and sensors in the car that will know if you've nodded off or stopped paying attention. And they do get your attention.
Take control.
So my seat just started vibrating.
Right,
yeah. And it'll get a little bit more annoying as we go along. This is the worst case scenario, where the driver's asleep or passed out or something.
Lights start flashing orange, then red. And if the human doesn't take the wheel, the car pulls itself over.
We're actually buzzing all seats in the car so that everybody in the car would be urging the driver to take control.
I have to tell you, I almost feel like I'm at a rave right now.
Well, hopefully you don't fall asleep at a rave, right?
This future of self-driving cars on the highway isn't so far off. In fact, it's just a few days away. Next week, Delphi will send a car on a cross-country road trip from San Francisco to New York. And while it's on the freeway, it won't have a driver.
It's going to be fully automated highway driving across the country, the first cross-country automated drive that has been done.
By the way, this trip is legal. There will be someone from Delphi behind the wheel on the highway, even though they won't be steering it. While this might not be a milestone on par with the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, it is a significant step. The switch from human to robot drivers won't be immediate, but incremental. It'll come in stages. We already let cars take the wheel in heavy traffic with adaptive cruise control. Soon, we'll let them take care of driving on highways. And one day, we'll let them do it all. But how far off is that point where humans are out of the picture entirely?
How far out is almost unanswerable question.
Walt Fair is with the U.S. Department of Transportation's Intelligent Transportation Systems Office.
But we think there's a logical progression to getting to there. And so the faster we can get through these steps of the progression, the more likely these things will be in place.
Fair's office works on connecting cars to each other and to infrastructure. And one of the key obstacles at this point is the Tower of Babel problem. Autonomous and connected cars are all speaking different languages.
So you have something that works in one particular city, or something that works if you drive a particular brand of car, fine. But it's not something that would be of a level that would give you that common experience.
Once connected car technology and self-driving cars are all on the same page, speaking the same language, then our streets and roads could look and operate very differently. Take out human error and inefficiency, and you could have a much safer, much faster system. But there's a lot we don't know yet about how that system will or won't work. Just ask Stephen Boyles, an engineering professor at UT Austin. He's been studying what kind of impact self-driving cars could have on traffic, safety, and travel. And he did a simulation of downtown Austin.
We actually saw travel times increase.
You know, we actually saw congestion actually get a little bit worse at very high penetration rates of these, even with the extra capacity effects that happened.
What this means is that making it easier to move around by car could actually make it more attractive to drive and result in more cars on the road. So the real impact of all of this isn't really clear yet. But one thing is, self-driving vehicles aren't just coming in a few decades. They're already here.
Your exit ahead in 1.5 miles. Prepare to take control.
Terrence Henry, KUT News.
During the South by Southwest Interactive Conference last year, there were only a handful of panels on Latinos in tech. And those panels were held at an isolated Holiday Inn nowhere near the convention center downtown. This year, though, the panels on Latinos have stretched across a number of days, and all of them have been inside the bustling Austin Convention Center. So we spent some time with people at South by Southwest who identify as Latino to hear about their experience at the conference this year.
My name is Mando Rayo, and I'm the CEO of Mando Rayo and the Collective, based in Austin, Texas. Well, I think things have definitely improved. Really looking at the schedule and all the content for Latinos is definitely 360. So I think it's great.
Hi, my name is Rosie the Closer Cepeda. I am from San Jose, otherwise known as the capital of Silicon Valley, and I am the CEO of Compelling Conversations Training and Diversity Consulting. So I'm literally blown away by the conference in general, but a little bit saddened by the lack of Latina and Latino representation here, given that it's in the great state of Texas. Quite frankly, it does feel a little bit like we included Latinos and Latinas, so we did our job. And I, for being in Texas, I don't think that's enough.
I'm Sophia Shapiro. I'm a Latina computer science undergrad at Harvard. I'm inspired by their dedication to fixing this gap between Latina women in computer science. So seeing role models from Google, from the entertainment industry, it's really great. And I hope to one day be as important as they are and help other girls get involved.
So my name is Laura Donnelly, and I'm one of the founders of Latinitas. Here at South By, whether it's an Americas track or it's just a general interactive or film track, I want to see this elephant in the room addressed. Like, the elephant in the room is this huge, diverse, Latino and growing brown community in the United States, or just people of color. And yet, I don't feel like it's being discussed in the forefront. You know, yes, there's so many different platforms to express yourself digitally, cinematically right now, but what's the point if the majority of families aren't able to afford the smallest of device? So I would look forward to more of these very uncomfortable discussions about this disparity. I think it's breaking through this year.
My name is Alberto Ferreras, and I think the reason I am here is because for the last 12 years I've been lucky enough to direct a show for HBO Latino called Habla. We feel like outsiders. I'm not sure if we are, but we feel that way. So I wanted to explore that, and I wanted to explore the identity of all of us who might come from very different places, but we feel united by something that I don't know exactly what it is, but I suspect it is that feeling of otherness.
Hi, my name is Mari Nunez. I work actually for Sony Music, and I live in Miami, but I'm originally from LA. We're celebrating the diversity in our cultures. I think Latinos were underrepresented as it relates to everything really in media. And we are a force to contend with, that's growth. And I don't think that Latinos should be boxed like we are in media. I think we're very universal people with many stories to tell.
My name is Rene Ramos Jr. I'm from Laredo, Texas, and I'm a student here at the University of Texas at Austin. I think the discussion was very spot on, and I love how we had people who we can relate to and I'd be influenced by them, as my professor, Ramirez Berg, also being Latino and having one day be a professor and teaching film as well. And yeah, it was cool. I really loved the panel.
My name is Juan Alaniz, and I'm the founder of JuanofWords.com, which is a blog on Mexican lifestyle. Being able to see how massive this thing is, it's really an eye-opener. And, you know, I think for me, it's this is happening in Texas. You know, we're very Texas proud. We're, Texas proud Latinos. So I think this is something that we want to come back to and we want to continue supporting.
The voices of people attending this week's South by Southwest Interactive Festival. health innovators came to Austin for South by Southwest to talk about medical technology. KUT's Veronica Saragovia visited the expo and asked whether new websites and gadgets could transform healthcare in the United States.
Mary Lou Brown has felt so lonely living in Austin. Since her diagnosis with lupus in 2003, she hasn't found any support groups for people with the disease. She gets a lot of help from her husband and son, but says no one gets what it's like to be in pain all day long.
Pain that you can't even, I mean, it goes from your heel all the way to even the scalp where no one can touch you.
Most of us have an immune system that protects us from germs. But if you have lupus, your immune system can't tell the difference between the bad guys and healthy tissue. So it attacks the healthy tissue, causing inflammation and pain.
It's like a bus just ran over you.
But about a year ago, Brown came across a new digital support network called My Lupus Team. It's an online community only for people who have the chronic disease. And now she has 600 people to turn to from her phone or iPad.
This morning I sent everyone a quick message and I said I was having a so-so day today, 9 hours ago when I woke up. And then I was just making sure that everyone had a good day, and then people respond, sending prayers or thinking about you.
Brown says local pharmacies have run out of her medication because of a shortage. So people on that site told her where to buy it online.
This is the only thing that basically has saved a lot of us. I mean, because there's times that, you know, some of us are really depressed and we just need to know that it's going to be okay and that we're not going to die.
Earlier this week, people involved in all sorts of health technologies convened in Austin for the first year of South by Southwest Health and MedTech Expo.
Yes, my name is Rob Taylor. I'm a research manager at Spot On Sciences, Inc. We are a small startup company that has developed devices to allow you to collect a blood sample.
My name is Devin Solberg from Redox Engine out of Madison, Wisconsin. So we're really enabling applications to get access to a much larger reach of providers and patients.
So I'm Nabil Binori, I'm the CTO of Ultra, and we make a wearable device that you can put on yourself, and it warns you before you get sunburn and tells you how many vitamin D doses you're getting every day.
Sounds great, but it's not being used in the mainstream, says Minnie Kalan.
The coolest stuff that you're seeing, including here at South by Southwest, still happens at the periphery of the healthcare system.
Kalan is the Vice Dean for Partnerships and Strategy at UT's Dell Medical School. Clay Johnston, the school's dean, says our current fee-for-service medical system in the U.S. resists innovation.
The problem is the system isn't set up to embrace those and bring them in. And in fact, it resists them because of the way docs and hospitals and clinics are paid.
Johnston says instead of paying for procedures and surgeries and office visits, patients should be paying for outcomes and for staying healthy, which would promote new technologies. But Mary Lou Brown says if it weren't for the My Lupus website, she'd still feel like she's living on the fringes.
There's very few people that would really stop and read a brochure to learn what my illness is about. So if I didn't have them, or I wouldn't have found them, I mean, I'd still be in the same boat. So I think, I mean, this has helped me better myself 100% from where I was.
Lately, Brown's seeing a growing number of people from Austin using the website. She's going to suggest something to them she's never seen here before, an actual group meeting for people with lupus in person. Veronica Saragovia, KUT News.
More than 2,000 bands are in town for South by Southwest music, and if you looked at the list of all of the artists, you could totally be excused for thinking, who are these people? I never heard of them before. Many of these bands are not widely known. That's why they're coming to South by Southwest to gain exposure. So we brought in a couple of rock critics to give us their take on South by Southwest this year and to tell us about some bands that have caught their ears. Jim DeRogatis and Greg Kot, they're the hosts of Sound Opinions, which is a public radio show and podcast out of Chicago that's focused on rock music. And you can actually hear the show on KUT 90.5, Friday nights at 10. I talked to them a little earlier here at KUT. Jim, thanks for coming to KUT.
Happy to be here.
And hi, Greg.
Hi, Nathan.
You both have been to South by each more than 20 times. How many times have you been, Jim?
22.
And Greg?
Since 1990, so this is my 25th anniversary. I'm expecting a watch to be given to me at the keynote. Snoop Dogg is actually going to make a presentation. I don't know if you knew that.
I'll catch the live stream. Yeah. Every year, it seems people bemoan the fact that South by Southwest has become so corporate, such an industry event, but Hasn't it always been that way?
Yes and no. Industry has always been part of it. Those guys who started this wanted to make a lot of money, and that's fine. It's a business that works. It provides a tremendous event for people. I think in recent years, 2014 by far was the nadir. The fatal traffic accident being one thing, but the ubiquity and the obnoxiousness of the corporate presence and the poor infrastructure of this city is swamped. It's overwhelmed at this point. There was a bad vibe in the air last year. It's always been possible to uphold the ideal that this festival was started on, to see bands literally from all over the world who you wouldn't see anywhere else and have a chance to give them exposure. I think, you know, when you had Lady Gaga and the Doritos tent and all that, it was getting harder and harder to go see those bands at the hole in the wall across the street.
Well, I mean, the city of Austin has intentionally tried to dial it back by issuing fewer temporary event permits. Also, this year, we have Uber and Lyft operating legally in the city.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that in my experience, just wandering around during the interactive portion, it feels slightly less chaotic in the air.
It's a little better. And, you know, Andy Langer, your homeboy, a Texas writer, made the point that they're damned if they do and damned if they don't. If they seriously dialed it back, booked fewer bands, accepted fewer badges, the corporations and the Spring Breakers still would come. Even if they canceled it next year, that would still all descend on Austin. I do trust that they have music lovers' interests at heart, don't you, Greg?
Oh, I think so. I mean, the quaint regional festival that we went to for those first few years, that don't exist anymore. It just is not there because everybody is bringing their expense accounts and their bands down here to get showcased.
How have you seen the music change, though, over the past 20 years or so?
There's been numerous changes. Jim and I were just talking this morning about the fact that, to my mind, the biggest revolution that's gone on, you know, this whole women in rock thing is a cliche, but I think we genuinely see just a groundswell of really great female artists. And I don't know if that's just the era that we're living in, if it has to do something with this confluence of equality issues that are out there, the fact that Hillary Clinton might be our next president. Women's voices are more powerful than ever. And I think they're speaking with an urgency that I don't hear elsewhere in the rock realm.
Fully 75% of the bands that I've marked as the things I want to check out are female-fronted or feature male and female members. I think that that's great. But always, whether it was the first year I came, whether it was the height of the alternative era when there was all that money, you know, Farouk Assault,
CD sales,
buzz,
right?
Oh, my God. Yeah, there was so much money. It was really ridiculous. I've always been coming down here to zig where everybody else is zagging. I don't want to see Lady Gaga, all right? I don't want to see Snoop. I want to see these other bands, you know, from Iceland who traveled from Spain or from all corners of the U.S. sleeping on floors to get here in the van.
Let me ask you about some specifics then. Which bands, Greg, we'll start with you, are you excited about this year and you think are perhaps poised for commercial success in the next year or two?
Well, I saw one last night, actually, Torres, T-O-R-R-E-S. Actually, her name is Mackenzie Scott. She records under the name of Torres. But she's about to put out her second album, and I saw a fully formed performer. I mean, here's a woman who's poised for a breakthrough. You know, it reminds me a lot of seeing somebody like St. Vincent here, you know, 7-8 years ago, really developing as a live performer before your eyes. I mean, the difference between Torres now and a year or two ago is just, it's a quantum leap. She's only 23 years old, powerful singer, and a great songwriter, playing mostly new songs last night. I just really think she's ready for a big breakout, and based on what I saw last night, she's right there.
Jim, who are
I
you
saw excited? A great act last night from Rockford, Illinois. I generally try to avoid anybody from Illinois, but he doesn't play around a lot in Chicago. Riley Walker, who did this sort of finger picking Burt Jantz acoustic guitar thing. I can be your love, I can be your satisfaction, baby. Songwriting that is very much Nick Drake, psychedelic folk. and pulled off a flawless, spiritual, soulful cover of Van Morrison's Fair Play, the opening track on Veedon Fleece. Now, people cover them. People don't cover that orchestrated, heavy-duty Van Morrison stuff. Playing that and playing it perfectly on St. Patrick's Day, that was amazing. It was great.
Greg, of the artists that you've seen so far, are there any that you think aren't necessarily getting the attention that they deserve?
I would say that there's a number of artists this year that I'm excited to see, but are very much, you know, what you might call a buried treasure, as we refer to them on Sound Opinions, or, you know, just under the radar. So, I mean, this trio, Chastity Belt, they remind me a lot of that sort of 80s indie pop sound out of the UK, sort of an updated version of that. Direct lyrics, but kind of a sinewy guitar-based sound, very sparse, nothing's overplayed, kind of very focused on the songs. From what I've been hearing on the recordings, very promising sounding band.
How about you, Jim? Tell me about a band that is not getting the attention it deserves.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was thinking. It was a Midwestern group, a small group called Bully, fronted by a really strong female vocalist. They are angry, they are funny, they are short, 2.5 minute explosions of energy in a very punk way, but tuneful. I don't think they care about selling records. I think they care about making this glorious noise. And we are privileged to be in its presence.
Jim and Greg, love talking to you guys. Thanks for coming to KUT.
Oh, anytime. Thank you for KUT being so great to us.
Our pleasure, Nathan. Thank you so much.
Jim DeRogatis and Greg Kot are the hosts of Sound Opinions, a public radio show and podcast out of Chicago that focuses on rock music. You can hear it on KUT 90.5 Friday nights at 10 o'clock. That's KUT Weekend for the third weekend of March. Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and tell your friends about it. Send any questions or comments to news@kut.org. Our theme music is by RAC. Thanks again for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. ¶¶